being invited to the podium twice this morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Cormitt, members of the board. Once again, my name is Rob DiPerna. I am the California Forest and Wildlife Advocate with the Environmental Protection Information Center. I want to revisit a general point that kind of covers a lot of different topics, and then I have some sanctioned comments from my organization regarding the West Side Recovery Project on the Klamath, really quickly. I want to go to a point that was made by outside counsel yesterday from Humboldt Redwood Company and Green Diamond Resource Company, when he referred to this concept of the burden of regulation. And I kind of liken this to, you know, we all look at driving as something that we all have the right to do. But in fact, in this state, as in everywhere else in this country, driving is a privilege. You get a permit for it. And in the course of getting a privileged permit to exercise that right, we live within certain constraints. For example, I'm a speed demon. I don't like to abide by speed limits. Nevertheless, the speed limit is there. And why is it there? Because it benefits the greater whole of society, right? And if I, as an individual, choose to nevertheless disregard those limits, chances are I'm eventually going to get pulled over. If I continue to do so, chances are my license will be revoked. Is that a burden? I will ask you, is that really a burden? Similarly, I would suggest to you that when we have a situation like this where discharge is a privilege, not a right, into waters of the state, waters that belong to the people of the state, every single person in the state of California has a public trust interest vested right in those waters. So then we look at, whose rights are we really protecting? And this brings me to an analogy. You know, I love to use pop culture references. Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, right? When Spock enters the warp core in the most dire moment in the movie, Kirk asks him, what is he doing? Spock replies, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one, right? Think about that. So I'll transition to the other point, which these are now the officially sanctioned comments from my organization. And that is with regard to the West Side Recovery Project, it is still our position that given the scope of the operations proposed, I will not use the term salvage on purpose. We do not believe that that particular project qualifies for the Category B waiver, either as it was previously constructed or as it is currently constructed. Furthermore, it is our position that given the scope and the significance of this project, we would prefer and indeed suggest that maybe that this is a decision this full board should make as opposed to deferring the decision to its staff. Thank you for your time this morning. Thank you all for your time yesterday as well. I'm headed back to Humboldt. Thank you very much.
Any questions or comments from board members? Okay, next, Gary Reinerson and then Brenda Edelman. Please be on the deck.
Chairman, board members, first of all, I came this morning specifically to Gary Reinerson, Green Diamond Resource Company. Sorry, thank you. First of all, I came this morning to wish Mr. Massey a fond farewell. 16 years is a long time on any volunteer board, and this is a volunteer board. Having served on the Board of Forestry for 7 years, I understand the sacrifices all of you go through, but to do it for 16 years, thanks. So, good luck in your true retirement, Bill. So, the other thing I'd like to point out, and Chairman Corbett, you brought this up, is the governor's emergency proclamation, which is substantially different than an executive order. It has much, much broader authority, much, much broader ability to move projects forward under that directive. So I encourage, and I know I shared a copy of that with you, Chairman Corbett, and I encourage the board and staff to review that. There are very broad powers that the governor has enacted through that emergency proclamation, and including the removal of dead and dying trees, not just beetle kill, but it could be in the Douglas fir complex for MIPS and other miscellaneous pathogens. That there, it's about fuel hazard reduction. It's about protecting communities. It's about promoting biomass power and looking at, because things have to go hand in hand as you move forward. If you remove the material, it has to go someplace. And it's also about making forests more resilient. And when you make forests more resilient, you thin those forests, they're healthier. You also provide more opportunity for more water yield. You reduce evapotranspiration. You provide more snowpack opportunity. So there are huge long-term benefits as we look forward for these, as we hopefully pull out of this drought. However, trees that are already affected are likely to continue to see trees die for the next 2 years, even if we completely change our climatic patterns now. The other thing I'd like to add, and Bill, you've seen this for your 16 years on the board, is there have been remarkable changes in the forest industry in that time frame in forest practices. Unfortunately, listening yesterday to some of the testimony, you wouldn't know that. And I wanted to be clear that especially the companies that you have been working with on that particular agenda item yesterday, that there have been remarkable changes on those lands. It's one thing you have to have a licensed timber operator to operate. You have to have a timber harvesting plan, but we all have to have social license to operate. And I think that's been the reality that's really come around to our industry over the last, especially in the last decade. The two, both our company and Humboldt Redwood, are both FSC certified. We both have habitat conservation plans we operate under. There have been remarkable changes that have translated to those changes on the ground. And folks who haven't been on the ground, haven't seen those changes, I think it would be very educational. But there are, you've witnessed a wholesale shift in how operations occur in the forest. You've witnessed probably the most tumultuous time that this board has ever seen in the 1999, 2000, and in those few years, both of you. And thank you for that. I know those must have been difficult times to sit on this board, but we appreciate your efforts, and thank you.
I have two questions for you. First of all, if I can, I'd like you to switch hats. If you can't, I understand. But from the Board of Forestry standpoint, how are they addressing the bark beetle emergency order?
They have not met since that emergency.
Very discouraging. No,
yeah. I did have a conversation with the chair of the board, Dr. Gillis, last week, and he also is very interested in understanding the full opportunities that are available to the Board of Forestry under that order, and what the board can and can't do or shouldn't do under that order as far as moving forward with any opportunities to get actions back on the ground sooner than later to remove those dead and dying trees and to help reduce fuel hazard and risks.
And then the next question is just a general knowledge question or role. What, to the best of your knowledge, is CAL FIRE doing, and how are they approaching it?
Well, CAL FIRE certainly is part of the administrative team that put the emergency proclamation together. So they're well aware of the measures that are in there, and we'll be moving forward working with the Board of Forestry and the other entities to enact those measures and translate them to actions on the ground.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
We have just one moment, Brenda. We've got a staff comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Fred Blatt of your staff. We've asked the Office of Chief Counsel of State Water Board to look into that executive order and how it would affect our timber program. And rather than do that, each attorney separately do that, we've asked that they do that for us, timber regions, basically, across the board. So they're looking into that for us to see how it might affect our permitting and other parts of our program.
And just an editorial comment. You may have the legal that it doesn't affect us directly too much, but administratively, if the rest of the natural resource regulatory world is changing, we need to make sure we have an administrative process that can move quickly to adapt to that. And it would be a very awkward position if we were holding things up because we hadn't figured out a way to coordinate with the rest of the state. So I appreciate your legal approach. I think that's the right approach. And I do think we need to talk with our friends or our bosses, I guess. I hate saying that. At the State Water Resource Control Board to make sure we're coordinated with them. But I do think if you look at the issues we dealt with on mass fire acreage, they're very similar issues of very extensive logging, an emergency situation, or where time is of the essence. And so I do think some of the things we're learning on West Side should be part of our formulated response, or perhaps better. But, and thank you for letting me updating us on General Counsel. Brenda Edelman.
Thank you. Good morning. Brenda Edelman. I decided in this time of Thanksgiving that I should give thanks to people here. Not that I should, but that I want to. I want to say.
Even the undeserving can get thanks, right?
No, I'm very serious. I've been doing this work for 37 years, believe it or not, and I've been to many board meetings over the years, and I want to say you guys are the best, even though I don't agree with you sometimes, and I give you a hard time, but I just want to thank you, and I want to thank staff. Your staff, as always, tries to be very responsive and address issues, and I also want to thank Board Member Moore for all the wonderful reports he gives, because nobody has given the level of reporting that he has given, and I thank him for that. One of my concerns about all this, well, of course, I'm not thoroughly happy with the governor for abandoning CEQA. That's a minor problem, to say the least. I don't really mean minor. I'm being facetious here, although I do understand why he's doing it. But my main concern, and what I'm hearing more and more about, is because of the drought, the part of it that I'm deeply concerned about is the way they're talking about reusing wastewater. And I just want to tell you that I've been the recipient of several major articles recently that I will make available to you soon. One indicates the battle between scientists on the issue of the safety of the concern about endocrine disruption. And it's my experience that the state has not seriously looked at the issue of the low dose effect. And that very often what I see is that the assumption is made of the safety of low amounts of endocrine disrupting chemicals, which is simply not the case. So there's that, and one of the articles is a study done by Bill Keir's association 2 years ago on the East Coast for nymphs around salmonids and endocrine disruption. And I've just got the thing, and I just skimmed it a little bit, but one of the big concerns he has is about pharmaceuticals and wastewater. And they're finding evidence of problems with fish downstream of wastewater discharges. And that could have a huge effect. And it has implications for the reuse of wastewater. I also heard Mr. Moore state that they're looking into the safety of using wastewater on edible ag crops. It horrifies me that they're using it or allowed to use it on organic food, mainly because I have seen science that states that the plants uptake those toxins. And again, it may be very small amounts, but it's been well established that small amounts can be dangerous with endocrine disrupting chemicals. And I just want to urge the state, one second, I'm almost done. I just want to urge the state to include some of the scientists who have a different point of view. So far, it's looked to me like there's been somewhat of a whitewash on this issue. Thank you very much.
Before you leave, I have one update. As you know, we've been trying to figure out how to get a handle on this issue. There have been several counties now pass ordinances, and there was some litigation on the pharmaceutical companies. And the result of that is many of them are now cooperative in collecting pharmaceuticals so they don't get in the system. That doesn't deal with body fluid pass-throughs through human beings.
Yeah.
But it does mean people throwing prescriptions down the drain or having to go through a very arduous biohazard disposal method. There has been some really significant progress, some of it in this district, and I'll try and remember to forward this stuff to you.
Well,
but
it's
something that's working and being implemented and
I was
with amazingly
aware of that.
Little resistance. Yeah,
I was aware of that, but I'm just concerned about the broad use of recycled water without resolving this issue and dealing with it.
All right.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to take a 10-minute break. The next item of business is 3, approval of the meeting.